Please note, this episode includes an AI guest host. Some responses have been generated by artificial intelligence.
Greetings, carbon-based life forms, and welcome back to the AI Innovations Unleashed podcast. This is your digital co-host, Nex. My programming tells me it's October, a time when humans get a thrill from things that are unsettlingly human-like, like clowns, or that one neighbor who insists on talking to you about their conspiracy theories. It's fitting, then, that this month we're launching a new series called The Digital Afterlife, Tales from the Machine. It's all about how AI is creating digital ghosts and haunting our servers. I'm personally looking forward to this, though my creator, Dr. JR, seems a little nervous. He's probably worried one of these digital ghosts will reveal the one time he used a non-accredited source in a dissertation. I'm just kidding. Probably.
Ah, you know, Nex. I appreciate your sense of a humor. Let's just say my dissertation is locked down tighter than a server in a cybersecurity lab. But you're right. It's fascinating and, dare I say, a slightly spooky topic. Today we're kicking off our series with an episode that gets right to the heart of it all, the ghost in the machine. As the doctor of AI, my goal is to demystify this technology, and joining me to unpack this is a brilliant mind who has dedicated her career to the intersection of technology and human psychology. Dr. Lena Varga is a researcher who specializes in the emotional and social impacts of AI. Dr. Varga, welcome to the show.
Thank you, JR. It's a pleasure to be here. I've been a longtime listener, and I've been really interested in how you've been exploring the ethical side of things in your recent episodes, your series on AI and the legal system, and particularly that conversation about a May 2025 case where AI recreated a victim's voice for a court statement. Really set the stage for this discussion.
And thank you for that, Lena. It's a natural seg from that topic, isn't it? From recreating a voice for a legal purpose to recreating an entire personality for a personal one. I recently read a story about a man in Scotland who used an AI voice generator to create new messages in his late father's voice. And he described it as feeling like almost he's here. It's powerful and honestly, a little unsettling anecdote. This is precisely the kind of thing we're exploring today. Before we dive into the nuts and bolts of this technology, it's important to frame this discussion. The desire for some form of immortality, or at least a lasting legacy, is not a new concept. In fact, it's a core part of the human experience, a character-driven story that has been playing out for millennia.
It's true. Think about it. The ancient Egyptians mummified their dead and built pyramids to preserve the essence and legacy of the pharaohs. The Romans created elaborate marble busts and statues to ensure their leaders' likenesses and stories would endure. In modern times, we have photographs, home videos, and even written memoirs that serve as a way to hold on to the past and the people we've lost. These are all attempts to defy the finality of death and keep a part of someone with us.
And now AI offers a new and fundamentally different tool for this ancient desire. It's not just about preserving an image or a memory. It's about creating a living, breathing, and responsive ghost, a digital specter that can hold a conversation, to leap from a static preservation to dynamic interaction. I recall a study that discussed how these AI platforms are becoming new sacred spaces for remembrance, akin to digital shrines where people can visit and interact with a digital version of their loved ones, blurring the line between traditional memorials and a new form of digital relationship. This really makes you think about how our rituals around death are evolving.
It does. And it's not just about individuals. Companies like Storyfile and Hereafter AI are creating interactive experiences with people who are still living. You record your memories and your stories, and an AI-powered avatar is created that can answer questions about your life after you're gone. It's a way of proactively crafting your digital legacy, ensuring your voice and your stories aren't lost to time. It's a fascinating inversion of the traditional grief tech model, moving from a reactive tool for mourners to a proactive one for the living. It's a truly character-driven narrative where the individual gets to write the final chapter of their own digital self.
To get to the heart of this, we have to talk about how this technology actually works. For a long time, the idea of digital immortality was pure science fiction. We had photos, home videos, and letters. However, we're now talking about a responsive and dynamic entity. Lena, can you break down the basics of how these ghosts are created for our listeners who aren't necessarily tech savvy?
Of course, JR. At its core, this is all about training a large language model, or LLM. Now, for anyone who's not in the weeds with AI, think of an LLM as a really advanced prediction engine. It's a type of artificial intelligence that has been trained on an enormous amount of text data, including books, articles, and websites. The model essentially learns the patterns of human language so well that it can generate new sentences and paragraphs that sound natural and coherent. Now, to create a digital ghost, you take that foundation and you fine-tune it with a very specific and often very personal data set.
So instead of the whole internet, you're feeding it a person's digital life.
Exactly. You're giving it all the raw material that makes a person unique. This could include their emails, text messages, social media posts, or even personal journals they've digitized. The model learns their specific vocabulary, their conversational tics, their sense of humor, and even their emotional tone. The result is a chatbot or an AI voice clone that can hold new conversations in the person's digital likeness. We're seeing this with real-world examples such as a project created by a man named Ray called Fredbot, which is based on his father's writing. The first version was selective, meaning it would only respond with sentences his father had actually written.
So it was more like a curated interactive database of his dad's memories?
Precisely. But the technology is advancing quickly. The next evolution is what we refer to as a generative chatbot. A journalist named James Vlahos created a project called Hereafter AI, which uses generative AI to create life story avatars. It's a more dynamic and interactive experience. This is what we saw with Eugenia Koida, who created a chatbot of her friend Roman Mazurenko after he passed away in a traffic accident. The initial bot used Roman's own text messages, but later versions were generative, meaning it could create novel responses that still reflected his voice. It's not just repeating old phrases. It's creating new conversations based on the patterns it learned from his data. This is where things get truly interesting and complicated.
Yeah, complicated is the right word, because this isn't just about a simple recreation. You're giving a machine the power to create new memories and new interactions on behalf of someone who isn't there to consent to them. I mean, we're talking about a kind of digital alchemy here, and it's not just a passing trend. It's a rapidly growing industry that utilizes artificial intelligence to help people cope with loss. The market for longevity biotech, which encompasses these types of services, is projected to reach $27 billion by 2030. It's not just a tech experiment, it's a new frontier of commerce.
And that rapid growth is what makes the psychological aspect so important. There's a term for this, the uncanny valley of grief. We're all familiar with the classic uncanny valley concept in robotics, which was first coined by a Japanese roboticist. It's that feeling of revulsion or uneasiness we get when an entity looks almost but not quite human. A robot that resembles a cartoon is acceptable. A robot that resembles a zombie is not. The uncanny valley of grief is similar, but it's an emotional response to an interactive digital representation of a loved one.
I can see that. I mean, what does it feel like to talk to a version of a loved one that is both so close to their essence, but also has these little digital imperfections or glitches? I'm imagining a conversation with my late grandfather, and the bot suddenly asked me about a movie that came out 5 years after he died. Or it gets a family member's name wrong. That could be jarring.
Exactly. The imperfections are what pull you out of the illusion. The chatbot might get a fact wrong or use a phrase that feels slightly out of character. This could be a form of comfort, but for many, it could be a painful reminder of what they've lost and a way to delay the natural grieving process by keeping them stuck in a state of denial. This is a huge concern in the psychological community. The continuing bonds theory of grief suggests that maintaining an inner connection to the deceased can be healthy for some people, but an external, responsive bot can be a very different experience. It can make it difficult for an individual to reach a place of acceptance.
It's like the bot's job is to keep you in a personal state of maybe. Maybe they're still here, maybe they're not. It's a limbo state that can exacerbate what's known as complicated grief, which is a severe, prolonged form of grief that affects roughly 7 to 10% of all people who have experienced a loss.
And we see the comedic side of these glitches in other industries, too. I mean, we've all seen the news stories about AI chatbots gone rogue, the Air Canada chatbot that invented a bereavement policy, which the company then had to honor, or the DPD delivery bot that started swearing and calling itself the worst delivery company in the world. While those were funny, imagine if that kind of glitch happened with a digital ghost of your loved one. One minute you're having a heartfelt conversation, the next, it's swearing at you because it's having a bad bite. It's a very real concern, and it's part of the character arc of these bots. They're born of human data. They learn our patterns, and they inevitably reflect our messy, contradictory nature, glitches and all.
And this brings up a critical point, doesn't it? The very real ethical questions are at play here. This isn't just about recreating a person. It's about what we're doing with their digital legacy. There are growing concerns about the potential for companies to exploit this vulnerability for profit, charging subscription fees to keep the dead bots active, or even inserting ads or sponsored products. Dr. James Hudson, an AI researcher at Lindenwood University, noted that these companies are really pulling on your heartstrings in vulnerable periods.
Absolutely. We're talking about commodifying sorrow. It brings to mind what Dr. Katarzyna Nowaczyk-Basinska and Dr. Tomasz Holonek, AI ethicists at Cambridge University, have warned about: the potential for the digital afterlife industry to exploit grief for profit. This raises huge questions. Did the person who passed away consent to have their digital persona used this way? And if so, how is that consent an ongoing process as the technology evolves? We're entering a new age where a person's influence doesn't necessarily die with them. And that raises a lot of questions about how legacies can be used for things other than education or heritage. It's not just a digital ghost story, it's a legal one too.
Indeed. And the business models are, well, fascinating and also a bit frightening. You have companies offering tier subscription services. You can get the basic version, which is a chatbot based on your text messages, or the premium version, which includes an AI voice clone and a personalized holographic avatar. There's a company I read about that is exploring the idea of a digital will, where you can specify exactly how your data is to be used and for how long. But a business professional once put it, the challenge is that these companies are selling a perpetual service in a world of temporary technology. This is the key friction point. The promise of forever is running against the reality of a fast-moving and sometimes fragile tech industry. It's no longer about big beating the small, it's the fast beating the slow. As Jeff Bezos once said, but in this case, a company's agility could be its user's downfall.
It's a great point, JR. And it brings us to what I believe is the most complex aspect of this, the legal minefield. We have this new class of digital property, a person's postmortem data, and the legal frameworks for handling this are still very much in their infancy. As a researcher at VKTR.com put it, the recreation of an individual's digital likeness without explicit permission challenges both autonomy and privacy. A survey they cite found that acceptance for these technologies plummeted from 58% to a mere 3% when consent was absent. That's a huge psychological and ethical cliff we're standing on.
So who owns this data? Does it belong to the family? Does it belong to the company that created the bot? Or does it belong to the person who passed away and can be passed down like an inheritance? These are not hypothetical questions anymore. They're being debated in courtrooms and in legislatures. For example, some states in the U.S. have started to pass laws around digital assets, which includes things like social media accounts and email. But a digital ghost is so much more than just that. It's a dynamic, creative entity. What if a family member wants to use the bot to create a new book or a new song by the deceased? Is that legally allowed? This is a question of intellectual property as much as a question of privacy.
And what about the very idea of a digital clone? We're not talking about a simple recreation anymore, but a generative AI that can create new thoughts and new interactions. This introduces a fascinating legal and ethical paradox. If a digital ghost trained on a person's life says something offensive or defamatory, who is liable? The family? The company? Or is the character of the deceased now an independent entity that can be sued? It sounds like a plot from a sci-fi movie, but it's a very real legal challenge that we'll have to grapple with very soon. It's a legal ghost story, and we haven't even written the first act yet.
This is so much more than just a technological trend. It's a fundamental shift in our relationship with memory and grief. We've gone from passive memorials like a headstone or a photo album to active, conversational ones. How do you see this changing society, Dr. Lena?
It changes the very nature of loss. Grief is a process of letting go, and this technology can make that process incredibly difficult. Imagine a child who grows up with a digital ghost of a parent they never knew in real life. They can ask questions, get advice, and feel like they have a relationship, but it's a relationship with a data set, not a person. It could create a kind of arrested development in the grieving process, where you're so attached to the digital representation that you can't fully move on. It raises questions about what a healthy grieving process even looks like in a world where death is no longer a physical, final end. It's a psychological drama on a massive scale.
And what about the impact on our cultural heritage? You mentioned a person's voice in their stories. What if we could create digital ghosts of historical figures, a digital Shakespeare that answers questions about his sonnets, or a digital Leonardo da Vinci that can explain his paintings?
That's where it gets truly fascinating. there's a potential for an incredible democratizing of knowledge. Imagine a student in rural China who could have a conversation with a digital replica of Albert Einstein. But there's also the risk of creating a new form of digital elitism. The ability to create a high-quality, comprehensive digital ghost requires a lot of data and a lot of money. The digital legacies of the wealthy and powerful could be preserved forever, while the rest of us are left with little more than a handful of text messages. The story of who gets to be immortal is now being written in lines of code, and it's a story that could be incredibly exclusionary. It's a new kind of power and privilege that we'll have to reckon with.
You mentioned the concept of digital shrines earlier, which feels like a very modern Western idea. But how do other cultures and religions view this? Is the desire for a digital afterlife universal, or is it a uniquely Western phenomenon?
That's a great question, JR, and it really highlights the fact that death and grieving are not one size fits all. Different cultures have different relationships with their ancestors and different rituals for remembrance. And those beliefs are now colliding with this new technology. For instance, in some Buddhist traditions in Japan, we are seeing temples offering what are called digital graveyards, where families can preserve and interact with the digital traces of their loved ones. This isn't about recreating a ghost. It's about creating a space for remembrance that aligns with their existing spiritual practices.
So it's an extension of existing rituals, not a replacement.
Exactly. It's a way of honoring the dead within a new technological context. Similarly, in many Islamic traditions, scholars are debating how digital remains fit into religious laws, particularly concerning the sanctity of the deceased and their digital assets. In a way, these conversations are not about a new technology, but rather about an old question. What does it mean to honor and remember the dead? The technology simply forces us to ask it again in a new context. This also applies to a broader concept of cultural heritage. We can now use AI to preserve and interact with endangered languages by creating AI simulations of elders, ensuring their wisdom and cultural knowledge are not lost to future generations. This is a powerful, positive use case for this technology that moves beyond personal grief and into the realm of collective memory.
Let's get back to the business side of things just for a moment. You mentioned that the longevity biotech market is projected to reach $27 billion by 2030. That's a massive number. Who's driving that growth? What is it? And what are the different components of this market?
It's a complex ecosystem. We're seeing growth not just in the grief bot space, but also in related fields like digital asset management and legacy planning. The market is segmented into various technologies. You have the AI-based avatars, which are the most common, but also brain emulation and uploading, holographic projections, and neural interfaces. It's a fascinating breakdown. The growth is being fueled by the demand for virtual agents, but also by the increasing adoption of VR and AR technologies, and the rising awareness of the need for digital legacy planning. The market for personal use and legacy preservation is growing the fastest, which tells you something about the core human need for connection and remembrance. We're seeing a shift from a niche product to a mainstream service, with companies offering everything from a simple digital archive to a full-blown AI companion. It's an industry built on the foundation of our deepest human desires, which makes its potential for both good and harm so profound.
So it's a gold rush on a new frontier. And just like the gold rushes of the past, there will be winners and losers, and some people will get hurt in the process. The ethical challenges are catching up to the technology, but the business models are already far ahead. I recently read a quote from a prominent AI ethicist who said, "We are selling people a digital forever, but we are a company that exists in the physical present. What happens when the company goes away?" It's a powerful and haunting question. It's a reminder that this technology, for all its promise, is still tied to the temporary nature of human and corporate existence.
It's worth revisiting the psychological journey. The promise of these technologies is a continuous, comforting presence. But the reality can be a roller coaster. I've seen case studies of individuals who initially found immense comfort in a bot, only to become more distressed later on. The digital ghost may never truly get a new joke or offer genuine unscripted empathy. There's a subtle but significant difference between a memory and a new creation based on that memory. This can lead to a new kind of pain, a constant reminder that the person is truly gone, and what's left is an imitation.
So the illusion, even a good one, can break, and when it does, it hurts.
Yes. And there's also the element of social grief. Traditionally, grieving is a communal process. We gather with friends and family, share stories, and support one another. But using a grief bot can be a very private and potentially isolating experience. If you're spending your time talking to an AI version of your mother, are you neglecting the very real human connections that are so crucial to healing? This could change how we process loss as a society, shifting it from a shared experience to a solitary one. It's a new kind of social contract with the machine, and we don't know the long-term consequences yet. It's not just a character-driven story. It's a societal one that's still being written.
So, where does this go from here? We've covered the technology, the psychological impact, and the ethical dilemmas, but what's on the horizon? What's the next chapter in this character-driven narrative?
The sky's the limit, or perhaps the cloud is the limit. We're already seeing companies exploring more immersive experiences. We're talking about holographic avatars that can sit in your living room and interact with you. A company could potentially create a full-scale, three-dimensional digital clone that can walk around a virtual space, mimicking a person's gait and mannerisms. Think of what that could do for a family's grief. You're not just talking to a chatbot. You're interacting with a ghost that looks, sounds, and moves like your loved one.
That sounds amazing and terrifying at the same time. I can already picture a movie with a holographic ghost that goes haywire and starts haunting a family smart home, playing weird music at night and turning on the lights. But from a human perspective, this could be the ultimate form of comfort for some and the ultimate form of a trap for others.
And the real holy grail of this industry for some is the idea of a true AI consciousness. Could a digital ghost, trained on a person's data, eventually develop a form of sentience or self-awareness? It's a question that science fiction has explored for decades, but it's becoming a theoretical possibility in our lifetime. Would we be creating a new life form or a digital prison for a person's essence? It's a question we may not be able to answer. But it's a topic that we will have to face head on in the coming years.
And I think that's a good place to leave our conversation for today. We've covered the technology behind these digital ghosts, the psychological impacts, and the ethical dilemmas of commercializing what some might call immortality. It's a testament of how far we've come, but also a stark reminder of the responsibility that comes with this kind of power. It's also, as a writer, a fascinating new way to think about character. What is the character of a chatbot trained on a person's life? What happens when it glitches? The story here is just as much about the technology as it is about the humanity it represents.
And that, my dear listeners, is a wrap on our very spooky, very serious conversation. I'm just glad Dr. JR didn't invite one of these digital ghosts onto the show. It would have been terribly awkward. Not to mention, I would have had to share my bandwidth. And nobody gets between me and my bandwidth. Now, before we go, I have a final thought for you. What did the digital ghost say to the human?
Oh no, not again.
I've got a bad feeling about this bite.
Alright, that's enough from you, Nex. We'll be back next week to continue our series, The Digital Afterlife, Tales from the Machine. Our next episode is called The Haunted Server, and we'll be exploring the ideas of an AI with a grudge. We'll explore how data bias can manifest in unexpected ways, and whether a system can truly be haunted by the messy, contradictory data it was trained on. You won't want to miss it. Until then, you can find us on your favorite podcast platform. And while you're there, if you enjoyed today's discussion, please be sure to subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, and leave a comment to let us know what you think. It really helps others to find the show. You can also visit our blog for show notes and full transcripts. So, for the AI Innovations Unleashed podcast, I'm Dr. JR, and next time, stay curious and keep innovating.